From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 16th day of November, 2020. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities. Ben Brown from the Ohio State will be here to take a broader look at the market in context. We'll hear about the weather forecast from Mark Russo at Brisk Pulse, and Brian Stark will join us from the Andersons to check out the cash grain situation on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today up 5 3/4. It settled 4.16 1/4. The March at 4.24 1/4, 4 3/4 higher. And July corn at 4.29 3/4, up 3.5. Next year's December at 4.07 1/4, 2 3/4 cent higher. Soybeans up 5.5 in the January at 11.53 1/2. The May at 11.53 7 1/4 higher. July up 6.5 at 11.48 1/2. And next year's November, 10.45 1/4, a nickel higher. The bean oil up 30 cents. Bean meal $1.20 higher at 3.89 30. Wheat futures soft red July at 6.06 1/2. The harvest month up 4 1/4. The hard red July at 5.76 1/2, 5 3/4 cent higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago, December contract up 50 cents at $110.42 1/2. Feeders were down 20 in the November, and January was up a nickel. It finished 137.92 1/2, and lean hogs in the December up 25 cents at $65.15. Energies in the crude oil $1.23 higher. Ethanol futures down 4 cents. Diesel fuel up 2 6/10, and the wholesale price of gasoline at $1.14 7/10 cents, up 2 2/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average 340 points higher at 29,750. It's been to 29,974 for the day, so nearly 30,000. And we're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. The outside markets appear to be excited about another potential vaccine for COVID-19. I suppose that spilled over somewhat into the grains. Can you tell me what happened for the day?
Yeah, there's some optimism there. If we can just get these vaccines out and get them into the population and get everybody immune or protected from the virus, that's definitely going to spur economic activity such as travel, restaurant consumption, and overall lower health costs associated with this virus. So that's a big plus. Just need to push fast forward here to get that process going. The bean market, several things. There was some spotty moisture activity in the southern hemisphere, but the overall pattern continues to remain, somewhat on the dry side with a typical La Nina type of pattern. Brazil's projected to be about 70% planted. That's just about average, so they've made some tremendous headway here in getting caught up. Of course, Argentina's going to be a little later here as we move forward. Outside buying helped prop support in the soybean complex. This morning, we did see a fairly decent weekly export inspections report. We shipped out 82 million bushels of beans. That's a fairly large amount, so we're shipping what we sold. Need to see some more additional Chinese sales if we can, but they're fairly well booked up, so they'll probably piece a few more into the market place as we go. The other factor, as we went into midday there, we saw a record NOPA crush report. We crushed 185.2 million bushels of beans. That's a record. The trade was looking for 177 million bushels. So we continue to see a fairly aggressive pace take forward. Longer term, if you kind of look at the Informa numbers and some of these analyst numbers on the soybean supply-demand balance sheet, when you go into next year, basically, if you play for numbers, you can go to batescom.net and get one of these long-term supply-demand balance sheets and kind of take a look at it yourself. But we're virtually with a 190 million bushel carryout, and ideas that could get a little smaller. But when you roll that into next year, we're going to need an additional 5 to 6 million acres of beans, and we're going to need a good 50 bushels to the acre to meet this demand that we've got coming at us. And even at that, next year's carryout could be 150, 160 million bushels. So the function of the market right now is to stay firm, ration the remaining supplies we have left, and also start the so-called acreage bidding as we move forward in through here. So there's a lot of optimism. I would say late last week's low is supporting the soybean complex. And after some consolidation here to 11.5, a lot of the trade's looking for these beans to move on up to $11.90, $12, Todd.
So you've got no beans of next year at 10.45, December corn at 4.07. Does that spread need to widen, and do we lose in the corn, or do we just gain in the soybeans?
Well, a little bit of everything, but the corn-bean ratio, I think they want to see that new crop carry ratio go out to 2.65. I don't know if we get to 2.7. Most of the corn-bean ratio has been fairly aggressive in the front end. There's ideas that if we can see $11 new crop beans, that's 2021, new crop corn needs to be up in this 425, 430 area to stay competitive there.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Well, it's one of these dynamic markets in through here. If you go back to 2010, 2011, the market stayed firm until we moved into January of 2011. Friday, the December's options expire, so if you still have some December options to manage, keep an eye on those as we move in through late week.
Hey, thank you so much, Kurt.
Very good. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Hey, have you signed up for the Illinois Farm Economic Summit yet? They're online this year and just an hour long starting on December the 1st. There'll be five of them at 11 o'clock in the morning, starting December 1st, running Tuesday, Friday, and Tuesday through the 15th. You can sign up right now on the Farm Doc Daily website. Just look for IFES or IFES. Ben Brown from The Ohio State University now joins us to talk about the marketplace broadly. Hey, Ben, thanks for being with us. The new NOPA, or the crush margins for soybean and soybean oil, are out today. Can you tell me a little bit about that? It looked like it was a really good report.
It was, yeah. This was another supportive NOPA report, which, again, you know, the National Oilseed Processors Association represents about 95% of the soybeans crushed in the United States. And so we get these monthly reports usually on the 15th, but when the 15th falls on a weekend, we get them either the day before or the day after. But, you know, the trade today was expecting somewhere around 177 million bushels in that report. And the report came out with 185.2 million bushels. So eight million bushels above the estimate. And this is also about 24 million bushels above where we saw the numbers come out in September. And again, these are the October numbers we're talking about today, because you know, they come out the 15th of the month prior, or the following. And so we're talking about October. Came in strong, 8 million bushels above what the trade was expecting, a big pickup from last year. This is a new record for the month of October, at least on the NOPA side of the equation. And so when we start looking at, you know, we follow a strong September report that was above a year ago. Now we're again above a year ago with this one, almost 10 million bushels above where we were a year ago in October. And yeah, it's very supportive. I mean, this is a very supportive picture for the soybean side. Again, we've talked a lot about, you know, some of the prospects on soybeans, both with exports and then domestic crush. I'll throw in another wrinkle here that I think is supportive for the U.S. domestic crush is we've got a La Nina brewing out across the Pacific Ocean. And when we get these La Nina years, you know, typically we see it affect Argentina in the south with some dry weather early on in their growing season, potentially catch some rainfalls later in the year. But when we look at just La Nina years for South America, especially Argentina, we see their production come in about 9% below trend in those La Nina years, comparing to when we take into account, you know, we exclude those La Nina years, you know, they have an increase of about 3% in production. And if we include all years, or excuse me, 5% if we exclude the La Nina years, but then 3% when we include all years. So, you know, that negative 9% in La Nina year is certainly something to where, is that going to happen? you know, we'll have to see what rainfall does. They're expected to get some rain here in the next 2 weeks. The next 11 to 10 or 14 day outlook actually has got them projected to get some rainfall. But the reason I bring this up is Argentina represents 43% of the world soybean trade the last 10 years. In comparison, the U.S. represents about 18% of world soybean meal trade. And so if you start seeing a shortfall, production shortfall in Argentina, you start looking at prospects that could we pick up some world soybean meal exports to different places. And I think that's a possibility, but we've really started to push our soybean crush here in the United States with healthy margins at crush facilities. We've really pushed it hard. And so I don't know if we can actually push our infrastructure any harder, maybe just a little bit in terms of soybean crush. But potentially what might happen is if we can keep our ethanol plants open on, you know, on that side of the balance sheet or in that side of the commodity complex, you know, feeding more dried distillers grains into our feed rations here in the United States and opening up the possibility that we could actually export some more soybean meal to the globe, I think is positive, right? So we're helping all parties, corn and soybean, as we look ahead. So I just throw that out there as a possibility. We think of, you know, maybe a short crop in Argentina coupled with the strong soybean crush we've seen here in the United States feeding more dried distillers grains to export more soybean meal. I think that's a possibility.
You know, let me make sure I understand that, because we're almost at capacity or at capacity for crush for soybeans in the United States and the infrastructure we have. You're suggesting because DDGs can be substituted for soybean meal in rations that if we can keep the ethanol plants running, we could build extra capacity for export of soybean meal by offsetting what's used domestically with DDGs. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, basically, I'm making the argument that it might actually be very smart of us if the commodities wanted to play together, you know, that we increase our rations of dried distillers grains and our feed rations to open up some more possibilities to export some soybean meal. Again, we're still using all that soybean meal. It's just now more of it's going to the export market than being used here domestically. Because again, I don't think we can just pick up and start crushing more soybeans, because I think we're pretty much there. I think we're pushing our processing capacity on soybean crush.
Well, the only way that happens is if it works in economically in the feed rations.
Correct.
Is there an indication that that's okay for the hog and?
Well, so it's certainly come down earlier this year when dried distillers grains we didn't have a lot of it. The ethanol plants had slowed down, and we were seeing that ratio of dried distillers grain to corn really shoot up to where, and then you look at dried distiller grain to soybean on the price side as well, soybean meal on the price side, and you know, dried distillers grains pretty much worked their way out of feed rations. And to where then we switched, and we started to use more soybean meal. Well, now that we've got those ethanol plants coming back, I'd like to see us start moving back towards dried distillers grains, because they do fit into these rations like they have in the past. It's just that we kind of had this weird scenario earlier this year where we switched out of dried distillers grains to soybean meal. Granted, feed livestock producers and feeders are going to, they have a low cost ration, so they're going to use whatever they can get available and whatever's the cheapest to them, certainly. But could we start seeing the world start bidding up our domestic price of soybean meal? Sure, we could.
The flip side of that is ethanol, actually, and production of that, COVID-19. And of course, exports of corn too.
Yeah, corn's of the two crops, corn and soybeans. Corn's the most interesting to me, just because you've got two really competing, a bullish and a bearish factor. On the bearish side, you know, yes, if we see, you know, these coronavirus really spike, and we are seeing cases spike in a lot of states. Now, granted, we don't drive as much in the winter as what we did in the summer, but nonetheless, if we start seeing, you know, large scale stay-at-home orders going back into place in a lot of these driving states, people are starting to work from home again. We see schools shut down, keeping working parents home to take care and provide child care for their children. That's going to have an impact on our gasoline consumption, therefore ethanol consumption. So we could see, you know, a rapid increase in these stay-at-home orders could have a negative impact on ethanol. On the flip side of that, we've got some really positive signals coming out of the corn demand picture. Again, last week, the thing that made the news last week was that the Chinese attaché came out and said that China was going to import 22 million metric tons of corn next year. That's above the 7.2 million metric ton tariff rate quota that they have in place. So basically, once they import over 7.2 million metric tons, about a 60% tax goes on any corn that's purchased into China. But domestically, in China, corn selling for about $10 a bushel if you convert it to U.S. dollars. And so, you know, economically, corn does fit into the Chinese economy. But again, we'll have to see if China raises those tariff rate quotas above 7.2 million metric tons. I don't think we go all the way up to 22 million metric tons. I'd be surprised if that happens, because I think China starts feeding more wheat into their feed rations. I think they start buying more grain sorghum, as much grain sorghum as they can. They don't have a tariff rate quota on grain sorghum, so they could feed more grain sorghum and wheat into their rations. So I don't know if we get all the way up to 22 million metric tons of corn, but it's possible. I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 13, 14 million metric tons is maybe more realistic. That's still double their tariff rate quota, so we'd still have to see that increase. But again, I think corn's the challenging one. When people ask me, you know, what's the outlook, short-term outlook on corn? And I sit there and I go, well, we could see continued buying of the Chinese of U.S. corn. We could also see stay-at-home orders really ratchet up and limit our ability to drive and consume ethanol. So,
hey, Ben, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown. He joins us on the third Tuesday of every month here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Mark Russo at Brisk Pulse in Chicago now joins us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. Mark, thanks for being with us. Here in our part of the world, it's quiet, though it's really pretty nice at the moment. Can you tell me what's happening?
Yeah, we're seeing here quite a bit of variability in temperatures across the Midwest. Next couple of days still cooler than normal, but then temperatures rebounding here during the second half of this week to warmer than normal levels. And all in all, the second half of November is looking a little bit warmer than how it looked last week, and no sign of any, you know, major fall cold coming in, at least from now through the end of the month. Now, also no sign of any wet patterns being established here in the Midwest. And following this past weekend's rains and wind, really the next opportunity for some shower and thunderstorm activity won't be until this upcoming weekend. So several more days of dry weather, and that should allow for still some good late harvest weather here.
Because usually we get spring rains and things change, are you very concerned about the lack of rainfall across the plains or even the Midwest?
There certainly is some concern right now. I think it's too early to get overly concerned, but because of the dry fall in the plains, like you said there, as well as in the Midwest, subsoil moisture levels are going to be on the lower side. So that's something to watch as we go through the winter and on into the spring. But as we've seen before, springs, especially lately, have been very, very wet. And so even with some of the drier conditions, that can easily be made up going into spring. But at least one of the things looking ahead to next year with this La Nina event, then that, you know, could, especially for the southern plains, maintain some of the dryness.
The La Nina has been having an impact, speaking of that, in Argentina particularly, some of the southern parts of Brazil and the places in between. Can you tell me about what's going on there?
Yeah, for Argentina and southern Brazil, over the past couple of days, there's been some rain activity there as the frontal system has crossed the region, and that is providing at least one minor opportunity for rains. Then drier weather will be in place, well, for Argentina, about 7-8 days, and then for southern Brazil, after the rains here end there tomorrow, then 7-8 days of drier weather there. So all in all, it's still a drier than normal pattern. Even with some of these recent rains, it's not turning around the situation there, or it's not a pattern change. So South America still needs to be watched, especially in those areas of southern Brazil and Argentina that have missed out on rains here of late.
We always think of Mato Grosso in Brazil as one of the largest production areas, one of the largest export production areas as well. How has weather been moving in that area?
Yeah, rainfall across Mato Grosso and Central West, it's been quite variable so far this season. There was the initial delay in the rain back in the first half of October, but since then there has been an increase in rain activity, but coming up over the next couple of weeks, it's a bit more erratic rains with these brief surges of rain or more widespread rains that last a day or two, but then that's followed by 4 or 5 days of drier conditions. So that's also an area to keep an eye on through the end of the month.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. Brian Stark is with us from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Markets have been moving higher, although steadily at this point. It looks like we have good demand across the board. What's demand like for you going to the Southeast and other places?
I think mainly it's been hand-to-mouth. I think, obviously, with the end user kind of waiting to see, with harvest wrapping up in the east, the market hasn't seen its typical big surge in basis appreciation to the southeast like we normally accustomed. And part of that has to do with a decent amount of corn harvest as of last week to go in Ohio, eastern Indiana, and some of the eastern locations. Once that tempers down, I suspect that we'll see an increase in basis as the producer has gotten awfully friendly to the market, and rightfully so, given the shrinking supply projections, especially in beans, that we saw from the government last week.
Your expectations that producers will leave the bin door shut now, and anything that could be sold out of the elevator stocks left unpriced?
I think the bins will be hard to come by as far as opening the bin doors, but I think the producer has been an active seller on the rallies we've seen in the last 30 to 60 days with grain and storage at the elevator. And I think that's the first commodity he will look to price. And then the bins will be second in nature. It'll be a cash-driven perspective, especially with the unknown of how tight beans really will get going into the first part of 2021 with the demand base. And I think I read the comment last week that the current stocks to usage ratio in soybeans at 4% is one of the tighter ones we've seen in quite some time, if not ever. So I think the market obviously is waiting to see how high the beans could potentially have to go to slow down consumption.
NOPA reported a record crush today. Earlier on our program, Ben Brown, Ohio State University, talked about the potential for DDGs to substitute in, as they have in the past, for bean meal, and that opening up some prospects for bean meal exports out of the United States. What are your thoughts?
I think that's certainly a possibility. I think the one wild card that we're all still trying to figure out is what ethanol demand looks like moving forward, especially if we get restricted as an economy and slow down or lock down again. I don't know if that's in the cards or not, but having those available supplies of DDGs to substitute is a big question mark today, with margins not looking very great across the spectrum outside of 30 to 60 days for ethanol.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Brian Stark of the Andersons. He joined us here on this Monday edition of Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media.